Samuel Fromart has traveled all over the United States and Europe in a quest to better understand bread baking, paying special attention to the science of baking and even the history of grains. His book, In Search of the Perfect Loaf, is part memoir, part home bread making guide. It's published by Viking, and I'm very pleased to welcome Sam to our program today. Hello.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Is there such a thing as a perfect loaf of bread, or is it more aspirational, kind of like an ideal that can never 100% be realized?
Yeah, it's totally aspirational, and it's really what keeps you going. I was talking about this with Jim Leahy of Sullivan Street Bakery here in New York, and he said the perfect loaf doesn't exist, and he's completely right.
But you can come pretty close.
You could come pretty close at times, and you really almost nail it, and then the next day you try and do the same thing, and it's not quite there.
And does anybody know why? Because bread baking relies on measurements. You would think that if you put in the exact same amount of water, the same amount of flour, the same amount of yeast, etc., you're going to get the same loaf of bread.
Well, you would think that, except that you're dealing with a living organism. And an organism that really responds to, or organisms rather, billions of them in the dough that are rising the dough, and they respond to temperature, they respond to changes in humidity, they respond to, you know, how much water. There's a lot of variables.
And is it possible really to make as good a loaf of bread at home as it is in a professional bakery? Because they have all sorts of things going for them. They mist the ovens and they do all sorts of things that are really hard to do at home.
They have special equipment and equipment that's really designed to make a lot of loaves at once. But I think if you're attentive, you can equal and in many cases surpass what's made by many professionals. Not all of them. You know, there's that 1% who are really excellent, but I think you can really nail it.
Well, most of the bread that we eat today is baked on an industrial scale. And so I would assume the minute you start using a lot of machines and hands aren't as involved, you lose something.
Right. It's really, I mean, what I came to realize, I knew this starting out, that it's a craft, but I didn't really understand what that means. And as a craft, it really depends on, you know, the tactile feel. You know, you're responding to this living organism, and that informs what you're going to do.
When I was a kid growing up in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, there were lots of local bakeries. Each one of them had specialties. We'd go to one for cornbread, another one for seeded rye. But today we would call them artisanal bakeries. Then they were just bakeries. And then they all disappeared.
Right. And that's really, I talk about that in the beginning of my book, because I grew up in Brooklyn as well and went to a lot of these bakeries. And they were, you know, sons or grandsons of immigrants who started them, you know, Jewish bakeries and the like. And they all, you know, many of them disappeared. And it wasn't really until the 90s that this more recent artisanal wave began. And the breads aren't quite the same. I mean, they're taking bread in a new direction, which is wonderful. But that is a real era of New York that's seared in my mind, and it's really largely gone now.
And most people will tell you that San Francisco is the best place to get bread.
It's one of them. There's many great bread towns in this country.
Is New York one of them?
I would say New York. I would say Portland, Oregon, Seattle. The small town of Asheville, North Carolina, has probably more bread bakers per capita than anywhere else in the country.
And why is that?
I don't know. Some places where there's an appreciation of bread and it has a customer base that supports it, you kind of get this critical mass. It becomes this almost ecosystem. And where that's absent, it's very hard for one sole baker to kind of make it.
Well, why has Washington, D.C. been particularly poor, considering the fact that you have all these diplomats from all over the world? You'd think that you'd have some of the best ethnic breads in Washington.
That's what I thought too, and that's what I keep trying to convince young bakers, you know, to move to D.C. and open places. But for the most part in D.C., you have large wholesale bakeries that feed restaurants, that feed hotels, and you have very few operations where they make the bread in the back and sell it in the front. There's a couple that are really outstanding, but for the most part, I think it's a wide open market.
I received the King Arthur catalog, and they offer all sorts of flours that you can't find at your local supermarket. Do you need to buy all those specialty flours?
You don't need to. I mean, you could make bread with the white flour that you get in the supermarket, but as soon as you get into bread making, you begin to ask questions and you begin to explore different flours, either whole wheat flours or rye flours. And I think once you begin to go out of the realm of white flour, you're really discovering a lot of new flavors, a lot of new textures, and really wonderful breads that for the most part aren't made much anymore.
Your book begins with you're going to France to try to master the baguette, and you write that baguettes had defeated you. Why are they such a challenge for the home baker?
Yeah, it's interesting because I often get emails from bakers starting out, and they say, you know, I want to make a baguette. And I liken it to sitting down at the piano for the first time and wanting to play a Beethoven sonata. And it's just very difficult to do.
It's just flour and water and salt and yeast.
Right. You have to really have a knowledge of fermentation, of like when the dough has risen sufficiently to go to the next stage. And also the shaping technique involved in making a long cylindrical loaf that's airy on the inside but has this crisp crust on the outside. It's a really difficult technique to master.
Usually, if the people who are buying the bread are knowledgeable, the standards remain relatively high. But that didn't happen in France. There was a decline in the quality of the baguette, and then only recently the French have tried to regain the old glory of the baguette.
Yeah, it kind of paralleled what was happening in this country. Only I think for them, because bread is such a cultural symbol, the impact of that was much more serious. And now you have bakeries that are coming back, but still something like a quarter of the French people buy their bread in supermarkets. Bread consumption has gone down, and the bakers that are bringing it back are really sort of the small minority who are championed, but it's still a small minority.
But then they put a little thing on their window telling you that they are using the old techniques.
Right, exactly. And they can only call themselves a boulangerie if they actually make the dough in the premises. And this was precisely to combat the move towards bringing in frozen dough that was made in a central location that bakers would bake off. So this was part of the decline of the bread.
My guest is Samuel Fromarts, who is a food, environment, and business journalist, the author of Organic Incorporated Natural Foods and How They Grew. His new book, In Search of the Perfect Loaf, A Home Baker's Odyssey. You say that some of the most notable bakers in France you met had switched careers in midlife.
Yeah, it's interesting because in France, young bakers are tracked into vocational schools quite young, and you know, because they don't do good in academics for the most part, and so they may have mixed feelings about pursuing that trade. But many of those that I worked with, or several of them at least, were, you know, switching careers, really interested in bread, kind of like me. They just got obsessed by it and then went to the further step of opening up a bakery.
So how can I make a really good baguette in my home kitchen here in Brooklyn?
So the most important thing is time, which is it doesn't involve a lot of work. But if you make the dough one day, and I have a recipe in my book, and just let it ferment for, you know, 12 to 24 hours.
You put it in the refrigerator?
Yeah. Yeah, at the end of that process, the flavor, the texture, the quality of the crust, all of these things will improve by time. And it's why industrial bakers don't do that, because time, as you know, is money, and they don't want to spend that time in making a really good loaf.
So the flavor keeps on developing the longer you let it sit.
As long as you don't let it too long.
Yeah, I was going to say, why not let it sit 5 days?
Yeah, it starts to get very acidic and starts to go off. The yeast can get blown out, so there is a window there, but the window is pretty generous in terms of when you should go to the next stage.
And then, as you said earlier, it's impossible to be consistent here, and that can be rather discouraging. You put all of this work into putting it all together, and then you're letting it sit in a refrigerator, taking up a lot of space, and it doesn't come out well, and you wonder, what did you do wrong?
Yeah, and that happens sometimes, and it is discouraging, although it can be the prod to have you try again. I worked with great bakers who were very consistent, and I would say I can make good bread. Consistency is one of the things that I still have difficulty with, making it as good each time. That's really a challenge, and I've been baking for over 15 years.
Karl Marx called bread makers white miners. Was he saying this is very difficult work?
Yeah, it was. I mean, he was talking, you know, 18th century France, or you know, 17th century France. And these were, for the most part, young boys The French word was that they used translate into the groaners. That was the term for them because they groaned. And they worked in these basement dungeons covered with white flour and often suffering from tuberculosis.
Now, you said that you could make decent bread from any flour, the store brand, all-purpose in your local supermarket. But aren't grains really important? In fact, you talk to people about heirloom grains. Don't they add something to the quality of the bread?
That's right. The thing about white flour is it's a very uniform product. So if you pick a brand of flour that you like, you could probably, you know, reproduce the loaf again. When you're starting to use all of these heirloom and local grains, they may differ by the variety of the wheat and by the year it was grown.
So where do you get them in this country? Like Ansem Mills?
Yeah, you can get them at Ansem Mills. You can get them at the Union Square Farmers Market. I worked with a farmer in Maryland who sold at my local farmers market. He grew about 6 varieties of wheat. There was one particular variety called Faller that he grew last year that really I found exceptional. So when I go to Heinz, which is his name at Next Step Produce, I say, Heinz, can you get me the Faller from 2013? So it's almost like asking for a particular vintage, you know, that you want. And wheat can be like that. It's kind of wonderful.
Well, should you buy the bread flour if that's available in a supermarket?
Yeah, I tend to go for a slightly lower protein that you might find in all-purpose flour. When you use bread flour with higher protein, the crumb can be a little tougher. But that said, it's easier to shape a loaf made with bread flour. So you need to really experiment.
Sourdoughs require a sponge or leaven or whatever you call it. How complicated is that?
It's actually not that complicated. I mean, when you think of all the people making beer these days in their kitchens, I mean, making sourdough is kind of a similar process. And basically what you're doing is you're nurturing wild yeast and bacteria, and you're feeding it with flour and water. And usually whole grain flour is much better to feed these organisms with than white flour. And spontaneously, almost, you'll start to get a fermentation culture that you then use to mix into your dough and make a loaf of bread.
And you can keep this thing going for years?
You can keep it going for years. I mean, people talk about their sourdough cultures that are, you know, 300 years old and passed on.
But I'm not that old.
But the thing is, the culture can change. So if I gave you some of my sourdough culture, it would be influenced by your kitchen, by what the bacteria and yeast that exists there, and it would become your own. It would become hyperlocal.
And my oven, that's another issue. Our ovens vary. You can't always trust the temperature that you think it's at. Do you have to put an oven thermometer in to make sure that you're being consistent that way?
Yeah, you should if you're not sure about the oven temperature. But the most important thing to making good bread in an oven is probably having a thick baking stone, and that really projects heat. I mean, or you could do the in-the-pot method of the no-knead bread method of Jim Leahy, you know, and bake it in like a cast iron or enclosed pot. But I think a baking stone is really important. I put a rimmed sheet pan on the bottom of the oven into which I pour water. That creates steam, which is really necessary for having the loaf rise initially. And then I close the door of the oven and let it go.
You went to Berlin to learn how to make rye bread. Do we make rye bread differently? What about pumpernickel? Do we make it differently than people would in Europe?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think we do.
Why don't we make it their way?
I think we should. Some artists and bakers are making it their way. The reason I went to Germany and Berlin in particular was because I was curious about whole grain breads. And here we're told to eat whole grain. We are told to increase our fiber intake. And these are all the reasons that we eat, you know, whole grain breads. In Germany, they just eat them because they're good bread. And I was really curious to learn how to make a whole grain bread as good bread.
Do you prefer one kind of national bread over another?
I probably bake a lot of French style loaves, but I also, for whole grains, I do really like the Eastern European style breads, either, you know, German or Danish or, you know, what have you. I mean, I haven't really fully explored that as much as I'd want to, but I think, especially in bringing whole grains into our diet and exploring all the multitude of flavors that are available, that those spreads really do that.
Are we just simply limited by the kind of flour we have here? Is that why we can't duplicate what you get in Europe?
Yeah, it's very difficult, especially with the rye flours, to find those that I used in Germany, and also even with the wheat flours in France, they have a lot of grades of flour that are between whole wheat and white, and here we just have 100% whole wheat or white flour. There's nothing in between.
Sam Fromarts will be speaking as part of Fern Talks and Eats on Monday, November 3rd at the Green Building on Union Street in Brooklyn. More information is on our show page at WNYC.org. His latest book, In Search of the Perfect Loaf, A Home Baker's Odyssey, is published by Viking. It has lots of recipes on top of the stories of tracking down the best kinds of breads. And I thank you so much for coming by to talk with us today.
It was great to be here. Thank you.